This week on The Design Review, we continue with part 3 of our series on the design process and how we go about doing great work.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of The Design Review. My name is Chris, and with me is Jonathan.
Hey, so to start it off, we're just going to do a quick recap of everything that we've talked about so far in this series. And we've really dedicated this whole series around the process because it's so important in figuring out how to do great work every single time.
Yeah.
And that involves part 1, which where we talked about how to identify the right problem to solve and the why.
And so we talked also about, you know, the difference between going after low-hanging fruit versus actually trying to solve a problem for your customers, and how possibly these low-risk and low-effort solutions can also be rather low-impact sometimes.
Yeah, and if you haven't listened to that episode, that would be a great place to pause and go back and start that episode, because that'll kind of help. But it's not, you don't necessarily need to have listened to that in order to enjoy this episode. In part 2, we talked about brainstorming and the importance of spending time exploring different solutions and sketches before you move on. The what of this this whole thing.
Yeah. So, you know, after you figure out why something is the right solution, you need to start figuring out what it is and how, you know, what it means. And you do that by sketching and getting into wireframes. And today we're moving on to part 3, where we discuss all the details. So once you figured out your general concept, how do you go from that idea into a more finished piece of design work, which is the how part?
Yeah, this is the last mile of this design solution or design sprint that we're talking about. So you've come and you've identified a right problem, you've kind of explored all the different types of solutions, and you've started to really identify the way that you're going to solve that problem. But how do you take it that last mile and make sure that it gets done, and then it also gets done well, and that it gets out the door? So we're going to lightly cover all of that, although it's going to kind of, we're going to reference other episodes that we've done that where we've referenced some of these things and we've talked about them in more detail. So this might be a good place to, again, pause and maybe go to another episode or just take a note and listen to that one if you haven't already.
Yeah. So we did do an episode on the topic of production design, which covers this topic also. And so I think for this show, we're going to try to talk about some different aspects around production design.
Right. All right, so you know, if you've done a good job with steps 1 and 2 that we talked about, if you've done research, if you've gathered requirements, you've done some brainstorming, you've generated and tested concepts, you've talked to customers, and you've done all those other things, you know, you've prototyped some solutions and whatnot. If you've done all those solutions, the final step of creating the UI that's going to be delivered ends up being somewhat straightforward. And I say somewhat because we'll talk about that in a second. But
I was going to challenge you there.
Yeah. But I mean, so like when you're sitting down to make a screen, you know, it's generally pretty straightforward. You've already kind of brainstormed like generally what kind of elements needs to have on the page, the requirements there, who's going to be using it. And you've tested some basic like concepts of like the UI and everything. So like when you sit down to make it this final thing, it should be pretty straightforward. Now, where it's not straightforward is what I call like where you're going to make your money as a designer. Like all that other stuff, you can actually invite engineers, PMs, like they can actually do steps 1 and 2. I think what makes a really great designer is the people who can do this last step really, really well.
Yeah.
And I mean that by like, this is where you will start to learn about all the holes in your design. This is where like random last minute requirements will like try to weasel their way into the design. This is where the team will be like lured into solving all these edge cases. Your developer will come up with like 1,000 different things for you to solve. Yep. And your time will start to be like swallowed up by edge cases. And this is like where stakeholders pop out of like the woodworks and provide like last minute feedback and require you to change everything and want to like add a new feature and things like that. And the way that you manage all of that chaos is what makes a great designer. This is where the people managing you are going to see you shine and really show your value as a designer, because any designer can follow some trends, you know, ideate and come up with a decent solution. But I think what really makes some of the veteran designers, the people who like know how to navigate this stuff, and that takes a lot of time. It takes like tact, it takes wisdom and all that kind of stuff. And it's hard. It's not easy.
Yeah.
But if you can do that well, then you're setting yourself up for success and your team for success. If you don't, then you can get lured into a lot of these black holes and the project can really get away from you. Yeah, What's your experience on that last mile chaos?
Yeah, it's really important that, how do I put it? You know, design definitely, I mean, I just wrote a giant essay about the early parts of the design process, right? Where you're kind of coming up with ideas and how important it is to design really well in those early stages, because so much depends on what gets decided in those early parts of the process. But, you know, for this episode and for what we're talking about, this is now we're talking about executing. And, you know, it's really hard. It's really challenging because you have to stick with a lot of the ideas. You have to be able to, you know, carry out something that maybe is a little different than what you originally intended, but is still trying to uphold the spirit of what you wanted. Yeah. And, you know, that's really hard to do. And in my company, for example, it gets even more complicated because, you know, you might be relying, for example, on some other company or some like outside supplier to do a lot of the, you know, some of the detailed work or some of the engineering and stuff. And so you have to then be able to also communicate the vision to somebody else and communicate so that they do the thing that you need them to do, right?
That's a great point. I like the concept you brought up there of the value in being able to communicate your vision, because you'll create some artifacts as a designer for this final, you know, some mocks, maybe like a clickable prototype, but you'll have to really think through, is this enough to communicate my vision? Can I just blindly hand this off to, you know, whoever is going to implement it?
Yeah.
Or do I need to be way more involved? Do I need to get on calls and give them the spirit of what I'm after? Does there need to be some animation to show off some things? Does there need to be like an interaction spec? And like, you need to find out the level of detail that they're going to need in order to give that vision. And it might be that you have to be in a lot of meetings where you sort of like talk through it all.
Yeah.
And you get them excited even. I think that's also part of it, is getting people excited to build what you've designed. I've always tried to do that with the engineers that I work with, is explain like the impact and the, you know, the reason why, you know, we chose to implement this really difficult UI thing. I'm like, no, it's going to be worth it because it's going to increase conversions, or it's going to, delight users, or it's going to allow, you know, them to like save, you know, time on task or whatever. Like, just trying to like give them an idea of what my thought process was behind that so that they know why they're building it.
Yeah.
And that sort of ends up aiding the overall like implementation of it.
Yeah. So we'll have a bunch of tips on how to get people excited about stuff.
Yeah. Also, like we were mentioning before, like this is going to be a place where the project is going to want to like veer off into a million different things.
Yeah.
And you have to learn to say no. So we did an episode called, I think, like something.
The power of saying no.
Okay. Yeah. I we should have said no episode. Like, yeah. There's no episode this week, and then people would have been so confused.
Yeah.
But it's a great, it's so, so important. I feel like I'm literally just relearning this. I need to go back and re-listen to that episode because, like, you know, if you're like me, you're somebody who just you're a team player and you really like to, you know, please everyone whenever possible, but you can't do that. You're end up pleasing nobody. And it's really important to know to say no.
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of do that by, having a clear vision of the work that you're doing. So I've kind of broken it down into four different things here. So one is scope. Know the scope of the project. So as all this feedback is coming in and you have all these different, you know, forces pulling on you and the design work, these four things will help you stay on track. Number one is scope, which is AKA how much work can everyone reasonably do in the given time frame.
Yeah.
And you might be saying, yay, Jonathan, that's the job of like a PM or a PMO or something. No, as a designer, you also have to keep an eye on this because it's really, really easy for the project to try to like increase scope. And it kind of starts with the design. Like someone will come and say, hey, you know, like, you know, let's do this, or can we change this, or why don't we add on this feature thing? And you have to be able to say, okay, that's interesting. Or, you know, maybe it's like last minute, it's going out the door and they're giving things and you need to say, okay, we're not going to be able to do this in the given time frame, so we have to do this later.
Yeah.
Rather than like, okay, I'll work, you know, another 4 hours after work in order to make that happen. It's really important to make those boundaries and to also gauge that scope of the project.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting you talk about that, because I was just thinking, like, you know, if something, let's say you have a design and, you know, the people estimate that it's going to take, I don't know, 5 days to do that, and you only have 3. How do you handle something like that? You know, how do you break down a design into like, okay, if we can't do the whole thing.
I feel like that's literally my job. Like if you could describe design, I think like in reality, it's like, that's like the key thing right there. You come up with that kind of stuff all the time in design, right? Like, I mean, I don't know if is it the same for you?
Yeah, to some degree. I mean, I think like, that's like the big question, right? Like, how do you compromise effectively, I guess, is the thing.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's really that MVP sort of mentality, is like, what is the minimum? What's the core problem that this you know, design, this experience is solving?
Yeah.
And what can you take away, or what can you downgrade and still have it serve that purpose in a effective way? Because it's often like, oh, well, you know, it's MVP. And so you come and you put together this like disgusting, like UI, like it's like a cake or something. Yeah. You're putting a cake, you're like, well, we don't have eggs, but you know, it's MVP, so let's just throw in some Clorox or whatever. Like, you're like, no, what? This is not, that's not gonna work. It's really important, and it takes a lot of like mind numbing like thought in order to figure out, is like, okay, well, if we can't do that, what could we do that's easier but still, you know, is enough where it's like a foundation that we could do that in the future and upgrade it to. So yeah, I mean, that's literally, again, that's where you're getting paid, is like those difficult decisions and figuring that out.
It reminds me, because I wrote another essay a while ago about how, like, as a designer, you just aren't going to win every battle, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I think the point of that one was around, like, you have to figure out what's really important, right? So, and then sometimes you actually have to give up, right? Like, let somebody, just in terms of like the dynamics of the social dynamics around a topic, right? Like, you might need to let somebody else like inject their opinion and just do it, as long as, you know, the greater vision is still like,
that's a great point,
right?
That's a great point, because I actually don't have that here, but I think you're right. I think you need to have a clear vision of your like core principles.
Yeah.
And then you can sort of like refer back to whenever like you have one of these inputs and say, okay, you know, it's really important. Like, for example, with the project I work on, it has to do with tech. So like making sure people are confident in what they're doing because they don't want to get fined is really important. So like, is it okay? Yeah, we need to add a bunch of like text last minute, and it's super ugly and I can't figure out what like a better version is, but you know, I'm willing to acquiesce on that because even though it's not an elegant solution or good, it at least serves that core principle, and then we can find a more elegant way to integrate it later on.
Yeah.
And then there's other things where they're like, oh, well, we don't like that there, and it's like, well, that's nice, but you know, changing it is difficult and it doesn't serve that core principle. So you can start to like check against that. So yeah, I like that. Like, find out what your guiding principles are and check everything against that.
Yeah.
The next one I have on here is to figure out who the decision makers are. When a change is requested, do you have to implement it or just take note? Because oftentimes, especially like as a young designer, or like a new designer rather, like you are, you know, you get all these inputs from people who are in high positions, but you really have to know and be able to navigate who are the people who are just providing input. And it sound, and the way that people talk who are in like positions of management or leadership often have like this authority that they talk, you know, they talk with, right?
Yeah.
They're like, you know, that's not good. Users will not be able to do it. We need to change. And it sounds so like, oh gosh, we have to do this. And I know this person's high up and everything, but do you have to listen to them is really important. So being able to filter that through the lens of like, okay, well, this is a manager, but they're on a different team, or, you know, like, you know, this, the project stage is here. So we're going to accept that feedback and implement it later on. You know, like being able to compartmentalize all that feedback is really important. And that's another really important aspect.
Yeah. I feel like the this definitely relates back to the previous point, right? About understanding scope or defining scope and providing estimates. Because if you're getting, say, some like change from some random person, or I don't know, maybe even your direct manager or something, and like it seems kind of like weird or like inconsistent with something, but you know, maybe you feel like, hey, I got to do it because it's, you know, this manager or something. You know, you got to think also about the scope, right? Because it's not just do it, like executing it will have a cost as well. So like, what does it mean for the rest of the product? For example, let's say this guy really is pushing for this whatever thing to be done, but if it's going to push out the deadline or the release date, like that's something that needs to be negotiated and discussed, because they may not even be thinking about it, right? And so like, okay, sure, we could do that, but it's going to add 2 more weeks to the release date. Is it still something you want?
Yes, it's so important. It kind of like, oh, you always kind of have to start with that. That's kind of why I put it as number one, is like, it's also a really good way to get buy-in for not changing things that you don't want them to change. But I mean, like, yeah, it also kind of like helps, like, you know, like put reality check on what they're saying, because so many people, and it is a good thing, right? Like people are passionate about having a high quality, really good product, right?
Yeah.
But you as the person, one of the owners of the project, as a designer, you have to own it, and you have to be able to say, okay, yes, but you know, we need to check it against scope. And my pro tip there for estimating how long things take, because it's notoriously hard to figure out, like, because, you know, you have meetings, you have other things that pop up, you have all these kind of other stuff. So I generally like estimate in my mind how much it's gonna take, and then I add like 40%.
Yeah.
Because it always inflates like a lot. So trying to figure that out and give a little bit of give yourself a buffer, just because as humans, we sort of tend to like underestimate things.
Yeah. My rule of thumb is just to double it. So you think about how long
you double it. Okay.
Like think about how long it's going to take you. So even if it's like,
multiply,
you
know, by 10.
Yeah. If it's like 2 days, okay, it's going to be a week.
Yeah. Yeah, because especially you have meeting times, like, well, okay, so if I work for actually, you know, 2 hours of the actual of an 8 hour day, then it's going to take me 10 years to finish this. So this is kind of like similar to scope, but the next thing I had on here is deadline. But really talking about the deadline itself, like, is this a real deadline? Can it be moved? Yeah. Is this like, maybe you have like a third party that is, you know, it has to do something, like, or it's a launch, or like you have a funding date or whatever, like those ones, yeah, they're like real deadlines. They can't be moved. Or, you know, is it something that's flexible and you can say, okay, yeah, our deadline is thing, but this is really important to the design, so let's like move the deadline.
Yeah.
And also like knowing when your deliverables are due, because that might come as a surprise to you that things that yours is due like a month earlier, or that you actually, you know, yeah, the deadline is due here, but you can deliver X, Y, and Z after the deadline because, you know, the engineers can start working on whatever. You know, like you can kind of, if you can feel out what the actual deadlines are, that'll help you figure out how to like navigate the work to work.
Yeah. So for us, you know, in my in my company and the projects that we have, we tend to do like, so we don't have project management, so we do our own project planning. Okay. And what usually ends up happening is we do a lot of reverse engineering based on sort of the deadlines and milestones that we define. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of discussion we have, like especially in the beginning of a project where, you know, we really need to sit down with engineers and say, okay, this is kind of like, we do a little bit of work to figure out kind of a rough direction. We say, sit down with people and say, okay, this is what we're thinking. And, you know, we need to put together a project plan. So how much time would it take to start developing, you know, like figuring out what stuff we need to do to the software platform and then different frameworks within the car systems and, you know, continue on from there and then line everything up so that, you know, by the time an engineer has done kind of all of their back end sort of work and prep work, and when they start to get ready for some like UI implementation, like we can coordinate our design process within the right kind of time so that like basically we've done enough design work so that we can start transitioning it from just like wireframes and sketches to some actual prototyping and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the that was a long story to say. When you're talking about deadlines, like don't just talk about deadlines like within your own project or within like the work that you have to do. Like make sure you're incorporating like the engineers that you work with or like yeah. whatever other teams that you interface with, because like there might be some important dependencies that you have to think about as part of your whole like, well, your whole scoping activity, for example.
Yeah, and like in the way that you like what you choose to work on when is really, yeah. you know, you don't want that to sneak up on you and say, you know, I'm working on the main, you know, screen interfaces, but we have this third party who needs to start building things. And so, oh, you should have worked on that specific screen first.
Yeah.
So knowing all those things is really important in order to do a good job on this.
Yeah.
Kind of brings me to number four, which is knowing what your deliverables are. Knowing, you know, for example, like, and also, you know, knowing when, but also knowing like, okay, what kind of handoff materials do they need? Do they need slices?
Oh,
yeah. We were talking about that. Like Chris was saying, who uses the slice tool anymore?
Is this still in there? I haven't opened Photoshop in like maybe a decade, but
yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's still people you might need it here and there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, you know, what kind of elements do they need? Are they going to need, you know, vectors of the illustrations that you've done? You know, do they need detailed interaction specs? Do you need to hand off CSS, red lines? Like, what do you need to be able to hand off so that you can do a good job handing that off?
Yeah.
So that's it. I mean, those are just some pointers. Again, we talk even more specifically on this topic of production design, of how do you go that very last mile, make sure that when you load up production, when your feature launches and you load up production, that it looks good and it matches your vision. So we do go into that in detail into that production design episode.
Yeah. So some other things that we wanted to discuss, and some of this comes out of the essay that I wrote. So the first thing that we want to talk about is this whole aspect of in this part of the process that you end up inevitably having to deal with a lot of other people's opinions about the work you're doing, right? So especially if you're like doing a lot of the visual design for a project, you know, invariably you're going to have to show it to somebody and then deal with a bunch of opinions, whether they're opinions you agree with or not.
Yeah.
And so the question is, how do we sort of deal with this effectively? We had a critique show a while back where we talked about how to have an effective design critique, but you know, can you just sort of ignore, can you ignore people when they give you?
Of course you can. But is it a good idea? Yeah, I mean, I think some of the stuff we actually just talked about does help with a lot of this. You know, if you have the, if you know what the, you know, the context of, you know, who's giving the feedback, what's the scope of the project, and, you know, what your guiding principles are, I think those things can help you navigate the feedback itself. Also, in our critique episode, we talk about how to sort of preempt that a little bit by framing the work before you present it.
Yeah.
Frame the work and frame what kind of feedback you're looking for.
Yeah.
Now, whether or not they listen to that, and I mean, that's as best you can do, right? Like, people will still sometimes go back to the other way of doing things and like criticize the wrong things, but yeah. it's still important to do that, because then you can at least go back and say, okay, that's great. I know that we're going to take note of that. However, this is the area we're in, and this is the feedback we're looking for, and you can kind of anchor yourself onto that.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that you tend to think about when you have to deal with people's opinions is the whole idea that the feedback you're getting is not constructive. And so, so I guess there's a two-part question. Like, how do you deal with feedback that is not constructive? And then vice versa, like, how do we actually define constructive feedback? Because I think that's also really important to understand.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot, because I think the teams that I'm on, I think we're still sort of figuring out how to do it right. Just because we work with a lot of different types of people. And I think one of the key elements is the way that you're asking the questions, because you can really move it. You can make it, you know, even if it doesn't matter your intentions, but the way you ask something, or the way you like point something out, can be really abrasive. Especially, it's like, this is something that someone spent months on, essentially, right?
Yeah.
And it can be really difficult for them to hear that kind of feedback.
Yeah.
So it's really important to like ask it as like a question and more open-ended, and really layer on the sort of soft approach that you can do, right? Like, instead of saying something like, why did you do it that way?
Yeah.
You can say like, I know you've probably considered a lot of different options here, but can you explain the reasoning you had behind that decision?
Right.
You know, and different things that were like, or you might have a bunch of ideas on how to solve something, but say like, what are some of the ideas that you have considered on, you know, that button placement? And they'll tell you, instead of saying like, oh, why don't you move it to the left? They're like, oh yeah, we considered that, but yeah, we can't, you know. It's better to sort of just make these like open-ended questions, sort of like lead them to solve it rather than you trying to solve it for them and looking like some sort of hero.
Yeah. And it's interesting you mentioned that, because I think if you pose it that way, like, they might give you an actually really good rationale for not doing it the way that you were thinking, right? So like, you might think like, oh, the button should be over to the left, right? As just kind of an immediate reaction. But, you know, maybe they had done something, and maybe they even like done some usability testing and said, okay, you know, when we put it over there, we also thought the same thing. We put it over there and we tested it and nobody found it. So we had to put it over somewhere else, right? And so like, so yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Like, leaving it more open-ended gives people a chance to kind of talk about the thinking rather than the particulars of what you're actually looking at, I guess.
Yeah, and really try and make your feedback about them and their work rather than about you.
Yeah.
And that really comes around, like, it comes out in these kind of ways of like, are you trying to solve their problem, or are you trying to help them do their best work? And it kind of boils down to, I think, that.
Yeah.
And how do you deal with unconstructive criticism? You go, you cry in a corner, and
throw a tantrum.
You go take a walk.
Stamp your feet.
Stamp your feet, pull out your hair. Yeah, I think it's really hard, though. Like, if I was giving an honest answer, I mean, that is my honest answer.
Yeah, what are you talking about? Crying in a corner isn't what you should do?
But I think one way to actually, you know, help improve the situation is to, one, if you're giving really good feedback all the time, your teammates will learn from that. And secondly, I think if you're in the moment sort of addressing that, you can, you know, again, like you were saying, bring up the ways that you've considered it. Yeah, and also maybe have like a moderator. Anyway, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
It's like a whole show topic in of itself.
the unconstructive stuff, it always happens. I guess, for me, I guess when I've experienced it, I've either tended to just ignore it, or, I might try to ask people more questions. So rather than just completely like ignoring what they said, like I might try to ask them like, well, why do you think it ought to be moved to the left? Instead of like,
Being defensive or
being defensive
going straight into like why you thought XYZ, like exploring their probe a
their
little
thought
bit.
process. Yeah, because crying in a corner helps, but at the end of the day, you gotta still work with the person, and so like you could use it as a point to try to understand their thinking as well.
Yeah, that's really good. I like that. Like kind of pulling out the constructive part out of them.
Yeah, like tell me more about that. Why do you think we ought to move it to the left?
I like that a lot.
And then they might go,
Well, I don't know. It just kind of felt. I've seen it that way on
I
other screens.
don't know. Yeah. Apple does it that way, so why don't we
That's
do it that way? Oh, okay. Well, yeah, maybe we'll try it next time.
My daughter's friends showed us an app the other day, and they did it like
That's the best
that.
one. Oh, okay. Well, maybe she should work here instead of me. Okay, so the next topic that I had here was around this whole idea around visual concepts. And in the essay, I wrote that good visual design requires a lot of research. Do you agree with that, actually?
Yeah, I mean, I think anything re can require like a lot of research. Like, if you're doing something for customers and you have a problem, like, finding out about that and using it in your solution is good for pretty much every position that has to do with customer problems, right?
Yeah, I mean, because like in my job, like I'm on a team of engineers and interaction designers, and there's a lot of people talking about user experience design, but I think what tends to get ignored is how difficult and complicated it is to actually do like really good visual design, because it's so important.
Especially like when they're tasked with creating it as like a cohesive system, it's not like a
Yeah.
one-off. That's really, really difficult.
Yeah. And so one of the things that I've struggled with in working with people sometimes is like, in order to really develop as you mentioned, like a cohesive like visual system, you really have to spend a lot of time researching and thinking about stuff, because in order to convey an idea in a visual way, especially when you're talking about things that are interactive, like you have to really develop like a good process around figuring all that stuff out. So,
Yeah, and they're so married and related. Like you can't just do like visual UI design without getting into interaction design
yeah.
and vice versa. Like you can't just do wireframes and stuff when because those colors and those layouts, they have such a huge impact on the feel of the app, the way it interacts, the usability of it. Like there's no like separating them
Yeah.
completely.
Now, that said, there's a couple questions that I think might be interesting to discuss. So, first of all, how do you select the quote unquote right typeface for a project? And how do you know when you found the right one?
That's easy. So you browse websites for a typography and you bookmark or download like 500 of them. And then you open up a sketch and you like toggle through them for like another 3 hours until you choose none of them
Yeah.
and you go back to the one you always use.
Ah, okay. Like Arial or something. Just use Arial.
Oh no, we don't use Arial. Unless you're designing an email.
Yeah.
Then Arial's like a godsend.
Yeah. So, I mean, this gets into some really interesting topics. In my opinion, it gets into a lot of interesting topics around design, because choosing a typeface seems rather innocuous, right? Like, as you said, like you could just sort of scroll through the fonts that are loaded on your system and just like, oh, that looks cool. Done.
Cool things.
But there's so much that a typeface could convey, and it's really important to find the right one, you know, like, especially these days when, like, you know, a company updates their logo and, like, immediately, like, design Twitter has, like, a freaking explosion of, like, negative comments, right? Like, something like a typeface would just, like, irritate the heck out of a bunch of people. So imagine if, like, I don't know, Coca-Cola changed their logo style to, like, you know, Helvetica.
Like Pepsi?
Yeah. Like, people just, like, freak out.
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a lot of stuff to consider. I mean, like, you have to consider, especially nowadays, like, this font, what does it look like in small sizes, you know, in different screen types, you know, digital versus physical, if you're using it as, like, a brand thing. Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of things to consider there.
Yeah.
How quickly does it load, even?
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
What kind of language support does it have?
Yeah.
There's a lot, yeah.
So how do you know when you found it? Outside of just being like, oh yeah, we always use Arial.
Well, I mean, again, if you're starting a brand new project that requires a typeface, like, if you have what you're looking for down, like the requirements of, like, you know, this needs to work on the screen and this, and, you know, and then our customer base is like, or like the product itself is very, like, serious, needs to establish authority, you know, like, you kind of, if it matches all those things, then that's how you, like, narrow it down. But at the end, it's really a stylistic choice.
Mm-hmm.
After that point. And I think that's, I don't know, that's never fully quantifiable. Like, it takes someone to have, like, an art direction.
Yeah.
And have that vision of how all the different things are going to work together moving forward, and, like, all the different needs and things and the ways it's going to be implemented in the app and everything, how it's all going to work together. That takes a little bit of a vision.
It makes me think also, like, you know, the typeface that you choose, you know, how much does it need to reflect, say, the company brand, right? Because depending on what, like, logo type and stuff your company has, like, it may or may not be appropriate to use the exact same thing.
Yeah, a lot of people will use that for, like, their header fonts and stuff, but it's not always appropriate.
Yeah. Like, in my case, the company's brand uses a serif face to write the words Mercedes-Benz, right? You probably wouldn't want a serif face in the actual UI of the car. Just saying.
But I would love to see Coca-Cola's website, like, all in cursive.
Yeah, right?
Like, the nutrition facts, like, yeah. In, like, cursive. Like, just, I don't all know cursive. How much sodium this thing is.
Yeah. Does that even say sodium? What is that word?
All right. So we're getting a little short on time. Do you want to, like, jump to the last thing we had on here?
Yeah. So we got a bunch of other discussion topics. And so this is getting a little meta. So just to forewarn you. But
how to do a good podcast?
Yeah. No, but well, we could talk about that later. But but one thing that I've noticed about myself is, like, as I've gotten older and more experienced and just over time, I sort of feel like I rely less and less on, like, a more prescriptive process than, like, maybe when I was, like, just starting off, right? So, like, in the very beginning when I was, like, getting my first job, like, I remember spending time working with people to define a process and how are we going to make all this work happen and this, that, and the other thing before I actually even did anything. These days, I feel like I just don't need, not that I don't care about it, but like, I just don't emphasize that as much. And so I feel like I tend to work sort of process less. I had a quote here that I won't read because it's rather long, but it's from Bruce Lee, and he talks about how you need,
man,
to,
I wanted
be
you to, like, say it with his, like, his voice.
I can't, you know.
Or like, or even like a sensei or something, because it's a nice one.
Well, it's this idea that you have to be sort of shapeless and formless, right? So when he said, when you pour water into a cup, the water becomes the cup. When you pour water into a bottle, it becomes the bottle, right? And it's this idea that a process really defines a particular form, but, like, I guess what I was thinking is, like, as you get more experience, you rely less on figuring out that process, and you really just use the different aspects of like a process to solve a design problem. So like, it's not that we don't, in my job, it's not that we don't do testing, it's not that we don't do research, it's not that we don't do brainstorming. It's just that I guess I don't define it as rigidly as maybe I would have a long time ago.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting because I think there's an element of truth there, but I don't think it should be fully like just throw off all the, the process and whatnot. Like you should always be adaptable, but you should have your process very like thoroughly fleshed out so that you can and understood so that you can purposely break it when needed. Like you know when you don't need something because you really understand like how it fits and like and how the project is going, and so you can make that call. But even then, I think it's interesting to like follow a process because it does a couple other things outside of the actual like end result. It helps, one is like we said at the beginning of this whole series, is a process helps you create good work consistently.
That's true.
And sometimes you come at the end of it and you don't have good work, and you kind of look back and then you've sort of like meandered through your process, or you've allowed other people to sort of interrupt that or like change that process a little bit. And I think, especially when we're like senior designers, we can kind of sense our way forward without following the whole process. But there's value in knowing it because then sometimes there's still surprises. There's still a lot of these unknown things that, we know exactly where we're going, but these other things pop up and we like add them to our vision, or it changes our vision of what we want to do. And those things still pop up. They might not pop up, let's say, like 80% of the time or something, but those 20% of the time, it can really like change the entire project, and it's totally worth it. And it's still worth it to go through that entire process, even though you feel like you're kind of wasting time on some of those things. And then I think another thing that it does is it gives you ammo in defending your work. It shows that you have a foundation, a strong foundation of the work you're presenting. And it also helps protect those elements of your process from people trying to help make you like skip that and move forward really quickly. Because if they know like this is the defined process that the design team or that you follow, and those things are like clear deliverables that need to like be sent to your design manager or whatever, that also kind of helps protect it a little bit, because they'll be like all this like thing of like, well, no, yeah, just knock out this screen for us. When you're like, no, I really need to like think it through. I need to like do a little bit of research gathering, a little bit of, like these like mini versions of it at least, and deliver this. Because there's always that temptation for like other people to like hurry you and just like whip together, a couple screens and then ship it and then move on to the next thing.
I think for me in my job, like, we don't have as much of that pressure where, like, people are trying to rush us through a particular part of the process. I think for us, we tend to, because we're working so early on topics, so maybe we have a little more flexibility to be able to do things as we see them. And that might be part of why I tend to not, like, I guess consistently do the same thing over and over again. Maybe that's bad. I don't know.
No, I mean, yeah, I mean it's interesting because I think, especially for you, like you're working in a research role, right? Like so you're an R&D in Mercedes. And so essentially your end deliverable is a concept, even though it sort of still follows the same, arc of design cycle. It's still about like, okay, what's the best concept we can give? Like it doesn't have to, fully match all the realities of the way it fits in the product. Like there's all these like very specific things that end up happening in the last mile. Do you think it has to do with that?
I mean, we do have to understand what it will take to get into that phase of the project, right? So, I mean, if we just sent over like just completely radical concepts that like can't be implemented, then like there's no point. Right? So it's not like we completely ignore that stuff, but I think it's hard to describe how, like,
So I mean, like you're saying, like, is this generally? I mean, like, we know this is within the realm of possibility. Like, you know, it's well within the realm of possibility. But like, really, those nitty gritty details of like this connects to that and that moves to this. You know, like, I think there's a lot there that, and maybe not even like in a big company like Mercedes, but like I know at Intuit we had this problem of, you know, PMs and other groups like trying to like make things happen a little bit too quickly. And its design's role to really like, and again, the process helps this, is to sort of protect that design process so that you can have good things can come out of it and you can build the right thing and you can design the right thing and you don't end up wasting your time having your products fail all the time or you lose reputation or anything like that.
I mean, I suppose if I had a different client, let's call it a client, you know, and going back to the things we talked about in the beginning with like those four main topics, like defining a scope and the deadline and all that stuff. So if all those parameters were very different, like I probably would do things a little differently, right? Mm. And so I think like, I don't know, in this whole like idea around like having a processless process, like I'm also not saying this is something like people should strive to do because like that's not the point of like bringing this up.
I'm trying to undo our three episodes.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. It was just something I was thinking about, like just on my own, and realizing like, hey, I sometimes don't feel like I actually do a process. Like I just sort of like talk to people and we discuss ideas, and I'll sit down and like sketch stuff out, and maybe I'll spend some time writing about, you know, some thoughts that I had, and then, you know, maybe we'll put some sketches together and do some prototyping and just see if things can work. But then maybe like it just gets scrapped completely and we go back to the drawing board and start that all over again and discuss some other topics. And so like maybe that is what's contributing to this idea of like, hey, maybe I don't actually follow anything. We just sort of like figure out as we go, and as we develop more ideas, it just sort of iterates onto itself.
Yeah, because I kind of feel like that's sort of like how, I mean, I feel like a lot of people end up in that way. Like if you're not protective of your process and you just sort of like, and it's not something you strictly follow, then you sort of, yeah, you skip it and you kind of just find what works and you make it happen. I think the good thing about, you know, it being like strict, but knowing when to break it, is it makes you go through all the checkpoints, and it makes you like, again, like having that, being able to reproduce good work every time, like that dependability of the outcome.
Yeah.
And even like reduces some of the cycles. Like sometimes I forget like, oh yeah, like what is the core customer problem that we're solving, you know? And if we've clearly defined a process, we're at this point, we need to have that, and we need to like bring it with us and through the rest of the process. It ends up saving me a lot of like design blocks and a lot of time, and it helps like strengthen the ideas because I have that's kind of carrying with you.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think it just helps you get better work more dependably.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what it boils down to. It's like whatever, it doesn't have to be the process we've discovered. It can be a completely different process. Maybe one of these steps doesn't exist for you. It's whatever steps you can implement for yourself and have good work come out of that every time.
Yeah.
And that's really what it's all about.
Yeah.
All right, so, cool. Well, we'll leave it to you. You can join this discussion as well. We'd love to hear from you. How do you feel about the process in general? And how strict should you follow a process? We're both on Twitter. You can chat us up, give us your opinion, ask some questions. We'll answer it on the next episode.
Yeah.
I'm at DesignUXUI.
And I'm at Machine Human.
Podcast is at dr_podcast.
That's right. Yeah. Did we get some reviews? Have we gotten reviews?
We did. If you want to leave a review, head over to iTunes, type in design review. We're the neon pink R&R. I mean, DNR. So we have one from Churdier. I don't know. Churdier. The title is packed with quality info and advice. 5 stars. They said, I love that they get pretty much right to business and they don't have hardly any extraneous chit chat or go down rabbit holes. Their podcasts are always so organized and honest. Thanks for all the solid tips, stories, and advice, guys.
Wow, thank you.
Thank you so much. That's exactly what we want to hear. That's sort of like the goal of the podcast. Little chit-chat and just as much value as we can help provide to you.
Yeah. Let's see. You can find all of our episodes, including this one, on our website. It's designreviewpodcast.com. If you go on there, you'll find also a feedback form on there to let us know how we're doing. So if you have a moment, you can fill it out. And you can even pose some questions in there that maybe we haven't answered yet, or topics for shows. So we really want to know what you guys think. We can have more discussions about this if it's important.
Yeah, we want this to be valuable to you in your job, help you to be the best designer you can be, and do the best work of your life.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for today. We will talk to you next time.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.